The name of that song is Teenage Riot, the name of the album is Daydream Nation, and the name of the band is Sonic Youth. Sonic Youth are so influential to many thousands of bands who cite them as an influence that no doubt all those bands are rolling their collective eyes because we played Sonic Youth's best-known songs. Perhaps it's their most accessible song. Well, that's how it goes in the world of indie rock. The name of our guest is David Brown, author of the new Sonic Youth biography, Goodbye 20th Century. Thanks for coming in, David.
Glad to be here, Mike.
Sonic Youth came out of the New York rock scene or new wave scene or kind of pre-punk scene in the late 70s, early 80s. It was a moment, a really brief moment in time, right, that they helped dub No Wave. And I know Thurston Moore, who's a vocalist and guitarist for Sonic Youth, has a book out about No Wave. Why am I hearing about this now for the first time? Like, where did No Wave go, and why is it coming back?
In part, you know, it's a nostalgia for a period of time in New York, that late 70s, early 80s period when you had an incredibly vibrant art scene. You had musicians and artists and painters and all these people coming together downtown especially and creating this, you know, kind of fringe community that still reverberates in the culture. You know, it's just it's a nice period to recall when fringe artists could move to New York and kind of get by on like day jobs and $100 a month apartments.
did No Wave and by extension Sonic Youth, when they first started, did they stand for anything or was mostly in a reaction to something?
That's a good question. I think they basically felt that rock and roll by the late 70s had reached a dead end and it needed something new. And so they thought, well, it's just like throw everything out the window and the start from scratch. And if we want to use a power drill plugged into an amplifier on stage, why not?
That was a device they sometimes relied on. But how would you define their sound overall?
The sound overall is it's almost unclassifiable in a way. It's a sound rooted in guitars that are tuned differently than your standard tuning, so they sound maybe to outsiders slightly out of tune. It's a kind of a mass of guitars.
Like every guitar, the strings go, what is it, E, A, D? I don't play guitar. I'm trying to do this from memory,
right,
from like when I did. But they just tune their guitars so the strings don't even sound like that, for
right,
instance.
Each one is tuned in a different way so that when you strum it, it creates all kinds of new overtones. The guitars sound much more expansive. And also, you know, the songs can quote-unquote rock, but at the same time, we're halfway through, the whole thing can just crumble into this, like, chaotic, feedbacky, you know, muddle almost, and then the song will slowly come back together. It's almost like a noise version of a jam band or something.
What's a good version of song, maybe an early song that does that?
You could probably go back to their Evol record, a song like Tom Violence, or even, there are just so many of those kinds of songs.
Let's hear Tom Violence from Evol. All right, let's talk about the people in the band.
Okay.
Who were they? Where'd they come from? How'd they meet?
The three founding members are Thurston Moore, who grew up in Bethel, Connecticut, Kim Gordon, who was raised in California, and Lee Rinaldo from Long Island, from Glen Cove. They're the core of the group, but the real genesis of the band was Kim and Thurston, who were two outside kids interested in the arts and some kind of career in the arts and some kind of life in the arts. Both came to New York in the late 70s. Kim moved here for good in 1980, actually. They met a few months later. They were both, you know, in their early 20s, became a couple pretty quickly, and within a few months started playing music together, even though neither of them ever had a music lesson in their life. And that was just typical of the scene back then. And if you just wanted to, like, bang away on your instrument, even if it was in tune or out of tune or a chord or not, it didn't matter so much as the energy that you were conveying.
You know, so you mentioned that Kim and Thurston, they felt like outsiders. And as much as they did and always have and kind of want to keep that status, they're kind of fascinated by pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
Madonna, they had a whole Mariah Carey song or period.
Yep.
And in fact, they even cover Madonna, Into the Groove. Let's listen to that. What do you think they're trying to do there?
They're doing something that was unique at the time. We're talking the mid-80s, and as another sign of their influence, they were bringing this kind of ironic, deadpan pop culture appreciation and humor. The sense of, oh, this mass culture thing is kind of cheesy, but we love it and we're just going to revel in it.
Now, they're not adverse to fame or success.
Right.
They put one of their best known songs on the new Guitar Hero soundtrack, and that's a song called Cool Thang. Those of you playing Guitar Hero 3 along at home, that one goes red, yellow, red, yellow, green, red, yellow, red, yellow. Let's talk about their influence for a moment. One of the things that has been noted is that they're a really influential band, and yet not a whole lot of bands who they influence sound actually like them.
Exactly.
Why?
I think they're one of the most influential bands in rock history, but not in the typical way you'd expect. It's true. There aren't like 127 Sonic Youth copy bands out there, and part of that is the actual sound, those guitar tunings and things like that.
It's hard to play the drill.
It is. Their influence is much broader in a way. Their influence is showing bands, younger bands, dating back from the early 90s up through now, that you can kind of work within the system and still do what you do and still maintain your credibility. Their influence is in all the people, the younger artists, not just musicians, but directors and illustrators and painters who they've brought along with them into the mainstream.
Another reason they're influential is they usually don't go long periods without a record every couple of years. Mm-hmm. Like I said, very professional.
Mm-hmm.
I think their last record was in 2006, Rather Ripped.
Yep.
Let's hear some of that. Incinerate. Accessible compared to, you know, stuff they were doing 20 years ago.
It was, and it's a perfect example of the left turns that Sonic Youth always managed to take. I mean, in one hand, there's something very traditional about Sonic Youth. They still have the two guitar, bass, and drum lineup. They're not using, you know, synthesizers and mashups and whatever else. They're kind of traditionalists at this point in time. Yet they always come up with some new twist on their quote unquote formula. And that record, Rather Ripped, in 2006, actually had these sort of hooky little songs. You know, my daughter, who was a couple years old at the time, actually liked that song, Incinerate. She said everything else was noisy, but she would actually sing along with the chorus of that, which I found really amazing.
All right, David Brown is a longtime music writer and the author of Goodbye 20th Century, a biography of Sonic Youth. Thank you, David.
Thanks, Mike. Glad to be here.